Every summer, professional drag queens flock to the coastal town of Provincetown to ply their feminine trade. Located at the tip of Cape Cod, the population of Provincetown balloons every summer from 3,000 to 100,000 people. And all the showbiz gals, no matter how famous they are, all get dressed up in drag to get these enormous crowds to come see their shows.
Today, Peaches Christ joins us to talk about her adventures living in Provincetown all summer long, rooming with Trixie Mattel, fighting against racist tourist souvenirs, and how all hell broke loose when the toilet stopped working during Bear Week.
Plus, a new study says intelligent people are more likely to fucking curse, goddammit.
And a French company comes under fire for spyware that will tell parents if their kids are gay.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Season 3 of Cooking with Drag Queens is coming next week. Follow Feast of Fun on Kickstarter to be the first to engage with the new series. Go to Kickstarter.com and search Feast of Fun. Real food, real queens.
Hello?
Is this Peaches Christ?
Yes, it is.
Is this pig fucker?
That is no way for you to talk about my partner.
You know, there's a new study that just came out that says intelligent people are more likely to curse.
Fuck, 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 fuck.
And the more swear words, different swear words that you can come up in a minute, the higher your IQ.
Wow.
So they have to be different ones. You can't just go fuck, fuck, fuck over and over again.
So what are we talking about intelligence here, though? It's not success.
I didn't read the study.
It's not the number of followers you have on Instagram or the number of people that come see your show at night in Provincetown.
It's intelligence.
It's the ability to come up with creative new solutions to problems when they're presented to you in a quick manner.
Is that how you define intelligence?
That's what the study defined it as.
Oh.
Yeah. So they basically polled all these people and gave them all these problems and questions. And they said intelligent people actually like to eat spicy food in the morning and they like to hang around the house naked.
Ooh. Wow.
So unzip those pants, Peaches, unless you're a dummy.
This study sounds dumb.
Well, you know, it sounds like somebody with an agenda is like, I swear a lot, I like to eat spicy food,
yeah, exactly.
And I like to hang around naked. How can I make that yes. seem like I'm smart?
Yes. Know?
But, you know, people with creative languages are usually pretty smart. You know, so there may be something to that. But then also on the flip sides, people say you swear when you don't know what other words to use, don't you? When you have a limited vocabulary.
Yeah, I was always told that, you know, swearing was a sign of being common. And uneducated.
You don't swear that much, do you?
Hell no. No, I guess I don't really. I mean, I'm not opposed to swearing. I actually like it when some people swear a lot. I think it can be colorful and fabulous, but I'm not a big swear person. I use it more for punctuation. You know, if I'm really mad or something, I might, you know, pull it out.
Whip it out.
Whip it out. Yes, exactly.
What about spicy food in the morning, like for breakfast? Because this is also the study revealed that people who have, you know, the ability to be creative when presented with problems or intelligence, as they define it, put a little sriracha sauce on their huevos rancheros.
Well, that I definitely do, but I just think it's because I like spicy food. You know, like if I'm at a restaurant or if we're making eggs or something, I always add hot sauce or something spicy to it. So, I never thought about it being related to my extremely high IQ, but I guess maybe it is.
How about nudity, though? Are you hanging out with, because you're staying in Provincetown with Trixie Mattel all summer, are you guys just lounging around naked around the house?
Well, one of us is.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
Not me.
From what I understand, it's a pretty big, you know, little Mattel down there too, right?
Trixie Mattel is well endowed. I've seen her penis at soft. I actually filmed it. And and
you
it
have
scared
a porn
me.
Of Trixie?
No, she was just changing, and we were like filming her, and Brian
and Fausto zoomed in on the cock, and was just like,
and I was like, holy motherfucker, Jesus Christ!
How do you think she got that new TV show?
Right? I mean, you know, that's how Hollywood works.
You know, you have a big dick, you go far.
Milton Berle. He had a big dick. He wanted to show it to RuPaul, and RuPaul was like, no.
I'm surprised she said no.
Well, she had a fill.
Well, he just shows it to everybody, whether you wanted to see it or not. He was the Louis C.K. of his time.
That he was.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, you can't sue you. He's dead.
Yeah, but I mean, Louis C.K. allegedly may not be masturbating to all these people.
Right. Well, I just said, you know.
If somebody wants to be in one of your shows, Peaches, what do they got to do?
They definitely don't need to sleep with me or any of that. For me personally, I don't know how that would make life easier. I think it would make life more challenging and difficult. So the best thing to do is be hilarious or have a skill set and be talented and keep a professional relationship with me. I don't know. I tend to not want to mix that sort of thing. I've never slept with a student. I've never slept with an employee. And I really, aside from a few in the early days, haven't really slept with many drag queen peers.
So you never gone kai-kai with Trixie or Heclina? Or
You're so fucked up even asking
I gotta
such
say,
a
though,
vile question. And I'm not talking about Trixie.
Heclina posted that picture of a young Heclina in the Navy, and I have to say, I wasn't horrified.
You were DTF with Heclina?
From 30 years ago.
He was a handsome man.
Yeah.
Yeah, honey.
No, I haven't. When I started doing drag, I did hook up with a few queens. Squeaky Blonde and I had a little thing for a while. A very short-lived. But no, I've never, I don't know. I find it, for me, keeping those sorts of things like separate has worked out well.
Mm-hmm. You're a fan of anonymous sex is what you're saying.
I like glory holes. Here in Provincetown, I spend a lot of time at night at a place called the Dick Dock.
Is that a real place?
Yeah, it's a real place. Google search. There's like a fantastic photo of the Dick Dock from like the 80s where someone accidentally took a picture with flash, you know, and it's all these guys, you know, blowing each other under this dock.
So this is like the song Under the Boardwalk, only instead of hanging out with your baby, you're searching for many babies.
Yeah, it's a deck, really, where they have this huge tea dance every day from 4 to 7 p.m. Hundreds and hundreds of people will be dancing on that deck in the afternoon. And then later at night, much later at night, the bars close here at about 1. And then at about 1:15, people make their way over to this deck, but they go underneath it on the beach.
And then it's just anything goes. Now, is it pitch black there? Like, you don't see who's going on? Or is there a little bit of ambient light? So you're not, like, you know, blowing your brother.
Or Heclina.
It's pretty the moonlight there, whatever. Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, who knows? Maybe I am blowing Barla. I don't know. But every night, I probably perform oral on 70 or 80 people. I mean, so it could be anybody, really.
Oh,
so you spent the summer living in Provincetown.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You've done a couple of different shows there. You've done Idol Worship is your new show, and that's the one you're taking on the road.
Yeah, so we did Idol Worship premiered here, which was a two-woman cabaret show with myself and Mink Stoll. We just got booked in Jacksonville, Florida, but we're taking that out where anyone who wants to book it should contact me. We kind of have a package deal. So, you know, you just basically like can book us and we'll roll in and present the show. And it was designed for this kind of tour for film festivals or cabaret theaters. And then two nights a week, I do Grey Gardens, the same Grey Gardens show that played here 2 years ago.
With Jinx Monsoon.
Yes, with Jinx Monsoon. And the other two nights I do a show called 5 to 9, which is a parody of the movie 9 to 5, which is very confusing because I have my own parody of 9 to 5 called 9 to 5 Inches, which I've done a few times.
Oh, so it's not the same.
It's not the same. This is a different parody, and it was written by a really fantastic legendary playwright here in Provincetown named Ryan Landry, who's been doing theater with his Gold Dust Orphans theater company for, God, at least 20 years. And so when I had the opportunity to work with Ryan, I jumped at it. And that is a play, a parody. So my parody of 9 to 5 is very much a drag queen parody. We are drag queens in the show. It's about corporatizing drag culture, and that's what the show's about. And I actually did it in Seattle and Portland with Heklina, Pandora Box, and Benda La Creme in June. And then it was very confusing because in July, I'm co-starring as the same character, the Judy Burnley character, in a new 9 to 5 parody written by Ryan Landry, where we're three secretaries working in the West Wing under Trump's administration. So every Friday and Saturday, people get to come and watch three women turn the tables on Donald Trump and tie him up and torture him. I don't want to spoil it too much, but you know, it's maybe a little bit of a cathartic experience. I don't know, but it's been really fun. It's a totally different show.
So in many ways, it's kind of like you're doing summer stock, where it's like you're constantly doing a new show all summer long.
Kind of, except that both the two shows, once they were up and running at the end of June, the beginning of July, then yes, they basically are the same shows week after week after week. So it's sort of nice for me in a way, because instead of working for months to present something and then doing it maybe a few times in a few cities, this has been so easy for me because once they're up and running, it's a machine. You know, I just roll into the dressing room and then drag, we do the show.
Fierce, yeah. Drag is fun. Drag is fierce. Drag is fun.
Yes, exactly. I say my mantra and then I go out there and do the show. And what's been fun for me is just sort of getting to do a run with the same show with the same performers and kind of getting to experience how a show can evolve or change or be different, and how you can find different moments for yourself and your character, different, you know, responses to other actors. Like, I've really been enjoying the process of doing it for a few months, but I'm also totally ready to go home.
Get back to that liberal bastion of San Francisco.
Yeah, because Provincetown is so hateful.
Well, you had to, what did you have to rally the troops to get rid of the Confederate flags in the gift shops?
I got involved in an online argument one day about whether or not it was appropriate to sell merchandise in Provincetown with the Confederate flag printed on it. And I was really disappointed in more than one person who thought, you know, it was silly of people like myself, you know, trying to have this shit removed from, you know, retail outlets. So that was a bit eye-opening and disturbing, because I guess you're right. Like, I guess I do a little bit live in a bit of a bubble, you know, being in San Francisco, because yeah, I was surprised by that. It really frustrated me, and I got into a huge, you know, fight about it.
Well, for the listeners that might not be aware, as you posted on Facebook, that you found some merchandise in a couple of the different stores. You spoke to some of the people about it, and some of them said that I'll remove it, but you know, the owner might put it back out later. And so, and so you're saying that most people on Facebook that I read, maybe I dropped out of the conversation, but so they seem to support you, but others are just like, what was their response?
Oh, get over it. You know,
I'm guessing these people are white, right?
Yeah. Like, their big argument, it's like, you can't erase history. So get over it. It's like, no, I can't even like get back into it again. I'm already feeling my blood pressure is rising. Just remembering. You know. This morning or whatever, but you know, it's just stupidity. Oh my God. It's stupidity. And this sort of, I don't know, like I've come away with it just feeling like white people are very threatened, I guess, about their privilege or their power or being a minority or something. I don't know. But like they're freaking out. Not all white people, obviously, but these people that are arguing to keep this crap. There's this sort of like panic or fear that you can't, it's just so irrational. You can't even really have a conversation. But that was it, basically. Like, oh no, you know, people store. And even one of the store owners, his response was so frustrating because it was like, we will remove, like they were literally selling Confederate flags, you know, in Provincetown. And it was like, we will remove these flags at this time. Why put at this time? Like,
it's a temporary thing.
To me, it's sort of like, you know, an undisputable symbol of racism, you know, and things that are ugly and problematic. Why would you sell this? You know, why is this something you feel comfortable selling? And at this time, to me, really means, well, this isn't really working out well for us right now because,
but
you
later,
know, things are heated.
When people are racist again.
Yeah, exactly.
When it's cool to be racist again. Well, I mean, there was a time when RuPaul wore the...
As Rachel Tensions
in the movie Tu Wong Fu. She wore a dress with the Confederate flag on it.
Irony, though. That's ironic. A black person wearing that. She's not endorsing...
In a lot of ways, drag queens take trash and turn it into treasure. And I think RuPaul was sort of trying to take something that was very controversial way back then at the time and putting it on herself and turn it into this glamorous dress. It sort of took the controversy and put it on its ear. And I've always said that RuPaul is always an anarchist, that he's always interested in making things more difficult, more complicated for people, not necessarily making them easier.
Just to be a bit of a, not that RuPaul is not those things. RuPaul certainly is. But I also wonder if maybe we're giving credit to RuPaul where a costume designer and a writer might have actually been the ones to come up with this concept. My sense is that was a major Hollywood movie and that the drag queens that were cast in the movie probably didn't have the freedom necessarily to design their own costumes. I don't know, but I would guess that that's something that was probably in the script because it's so, such a clever and cool idea. And that would have been very honest and true to drag in the mid 90s, you know, that edgy boundary pushing insider joke, of our culture would have been, it's something that was really true to the spirit of the time. And of course, you know, the audience would have gotten the joke of racial tension and, you know, using a Confederate flag to basically make fun of racism and to take the power out of it. And the problem here is like they're selling switchblades and flags for racists to, you know, proudly fly.
And with that movie, too, I forget which drag queen it was that was talking about during the filming of that. You know, there was a script that RuPaul was to do, and I think she changed one line or something like that because it sounded better, like take the piss or piss on somebody or something like that. Somebody wrote a blog entry on it, and they're like, no, stick to the script. And they're like, all the people in the audience were like, this is much funnier than what's actually written there. But, you know, they really insisted that she stick to the script. So I'm sure you said, everything there was, you know, locked in cement.
So you guys feel like she was told to do it.
Sure, but it's something that goes a lot. That's definitely her values. Her values are like, I'm going to challenge you on these things.
I'm just saying,
and it comes
I have
from
no
a place
idea.
Of love, a love of racist things. That's for you, Charlie. I said that on the podcast once, and a friend always says it back to me. She does it out of love. A place of a love of racist.
But I don't know if RuPaul wants to wear a Confederate flag as a dress. I think that's fine, you know, because a drag isn't about necessarily paying tribute. A lot of people don't realize that these statues and the use of Confederate flags in popular culture even is something that really was a response to the civil rights movement. And it's not something that's been around all along.
What would you think of that queen in Florida? I forget her name. The one that supports Donald
Elaine
Trump wearing
Lancaster.
She's a dumb bitch.
So I think we're all agreeing that context and intention is everything, right?
Right. Yeah.
So if you're RuPaul, I think if you know, like we're all people who cuss a lot and eat spicy breakfast food. We would
don't get lay around naked.
yeah, we like to lay around naked. We would get the intention behind that. Whereas if an idiot like Elaine Lancaster wore it, I would have to assume that she was a hate monger, mm-hmm. you know?
Although she did save somebody from a burning car in Greece once. Isn't that crazy?
And Lady Bunny was with
her. Lady Bunny was with her. Lady Bunny knows her.
Yeah, they hang out. Mm-hmm. So she's not that bad. If Lady Bunny hasn't strangled her to death.
You know, that you don't get a pass because you hang out with Lady Bunny. Like, you know, you she has been on. I watched an interview with her on CNN defending Trump. Like, to me, you are garbage. Mm. You know,
those are strong words, Peaches.
I hate Donald Trump and am actively, you know, doing anything I can to resist.
You know, every now and then I run into a sweet little old lady and you're just like, oh, this woman's so nice and so sweet. And then this comes out of her mouth like, I think we're being too hard on President Trump. We should be nice to him. And I'm just like, get out of my face, you bitch. But it is interesting.
I had an old woman yesterday tell me that she was going to squash me.
Squash?
Why? Oh, because I was riding my bike and I came up like beside her. And she was turning, and I was turning, and so I made my turn, and she then said, hey! Oh, she was in a motorized wheelchair, and she was going pretty fast, actually. I didn't realize how fast she was going. So when I made the turn, I think I scared her a little bit, which was not my intention at all. Mm. And then she screamed at me to stop, and I stopped, and then she yelled at me, and then I told her I was very sorry. And then I think my apology, instead of just diffusing the situation, it sort of made her more angry because I wasn't like, I have to say, in Massachusetts, like, people don't necessarily know how to, like, resolve conflict here. It's more just like, let's yell at each other and maybe start punching each other.
The Wahlberg school of
yes, exactly. It's real. It's a real thing here. Yeah. It's cultural. And so when I said, I'm really sorry, I'm very sorry, I didn't mean to do that. You know, that was a mistake. And my friend, my stupid friend, Jose, was like filming the whole thing because he thought it was hilarious. And she said, I could have squashed you. Like, I don't know what, I mean, it was like, are you going to run over me with your wheelchair? I didn't know what she meant, but it was very strange. And I said, well, I'm glad that you didn't squash me. And, you know, I'm really sorry. I hope you have a nice day. And the nicer I was, the more angry she got, you know.
Mm. Well, could you have just said, but you are in that chair, you bitch. You are.
That's what she wanted me to say. Yeah. I think she wanted me to say something like that. And I was like, I'm really sorry. I misjudged, you know, how much room I had and, you know, how fast you were going. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry about this, you know. And it was like making her more angry, like an earnest apology, which my friends then accused me of, you know, doing on purpose. But I wasn't.
So, Peaches, you spent the entire summer entertaining, busking, hanging out with other drag queens naked.
I do not busk. I'm not busking.
You don't
busking
stand
is
on the
performing
sidewalk?
On the street for money.
Well, but you stand on the sidewalk trying to get people to come see the show at night by contract.
Obligations, we call that.
Right?
Barking.
Okay.
Just busking like a dog. Is where you're performing on the street for money. Barking is when you're out advertising your show.
Okay.
You know, we perform in a theater.
And barking is a big tradition, especially when you travel to tourist places in Europe. They have people outside of restaurants trying to get you to come in. You know, we don't see that here so much in Chicago, but it's
no, it's a big part of the culture here. And it's been probably here since, you know, like, I don't know, 100 years. Hmm.
And so Provincetown is a town of 3,000 people that balloons to 60,000 for its summer months. And I can imagine
some weekends 100,000 on the busier weekends.
And that must be incredibly stressful to like the woman in the wheelchair who's just like, where are all these people coming from? Get out of here, you bitch.
Probably. But at the same time, like without all these people, there's no way to sustain this place. Mm. You know, it's completely dependent on tourism. That's its only, you know, it's not a vital fishing village anymore. It's a tourist town. Mm. So I get the local frustration with all the visitors and everyone, like all of us who live here. You know, you get tired of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But hello, like how are we going to, how's anyone going to make a living here? Why are we even here if it weren't for the visitors or the silly tourists?
Tell us about the weekend when the toilets stopped working.
Well, that was Bear Week, of course. Yeah.
It kind of
writes itself, right? It was like a few days into Bear Week, mm-hmm. and the whole sewage system collapsed in Provincetown. So, you know, it was problematic, you know.
So it was followed by Scat Week. Is that what happened?
Yeah, exactly. It was followed by Scat Weekend.
Doesn't the Bear Pride flag have shades of brown for a reason?
It does.
Yeah, exactly.
The big news item that happened that week, too, is that there was a sex shop in that town, and they had somebody come in and show all these bears a demonstration on how to inject chemicals into your dick to make it rock hard.
Yeah, that sex shop's like right next door to our theater.
Yeah, that was a big to do. So
I guess it's because it's illegal or something. Like the business got in trouble, but they weren't selling this stuff. Mm-hmm. But even for doing the demonstration, because this drug or whatever it was is technically illegal. Yeah, it became.
I think you have to have a prescription for it, and so whoever has it. And I think that they were trying to promote it to these guys as, "Hey, we've got some on the black market or something." I don't know. I think that that's what the supposition was. I'm not 100% sure on that.
I think you're right.
And a lot of guys who want to, go the extreme measure of injecting questionable chemistry mm-hmm. into their penis to get it rock hard, which, you know, if it goes wrong, you have to go to the hospital mm-hmm. and they have to drain your dick, and it's not a pleasant experience. It's because a lot of them are also wanting to participate in sex with drugs, and those drugs soften your dick. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you're meeting it in a happy middle.
Well, and for some guys, Viagra and Cialis don't work. And if you want like that rock hard dick, you inject it. And then, of course, you know, there's bears, so there's a lot of blood pressure problems. So they have erectile dysfunction. So
I know that.
You know what?
Sometimes
else
I take Cialis
week?
And what? It does nothing.
Yeah, right. What happened that week?
Sorry.
There was a blackout one night, and the entire upper Cape, not just Provincetown, but the upper part of Cape Cod was without electricity for like 4 or 5 hours, which
was
crazy.
Like the fire festival.
it was really kind of cool, actually, because everyone had to like serve, you know, like the whole town mm-hmm. was pitch black. But imagine just hundreds of people still walking, thousands of people still walking in the streets, and you know, theaters were in the, you know, in the middle of doing their shows and stuff when all the lights went out, and everyone really kind of. Was cool. Like they all took care of each other, and it was a kind of a exciting night in a way.
Were you in the middle of your show?
No, we had finished. It was a little bit later. My show's a little bit early.
Oh, for
all
the
of
older
our shows
people.
Have started at 7:30. Yeah, you know my demographic, the seniors. hey,
I got a meal with it.
You know, I'm not. It's not really a lie when you're doing a movie from the 80s, and the other one's based on a documentary from the 70s. You know,
but it's nice because then you're done and you can enjoy the nightlife.
Yeah, no, I love it. Oh, yeah, you know me. I'm out all night.
Well, you get to see. Listen, how many fantastic shows have you gone to see this season?
That's true. I do go to all the shows mm-hmm. and stuff. But there's a lot of popular nightclubs here and nightlife things, and I haven't participated mm-hmm. in very much. So yeah, I'm a little bit of a square. But also too, I find that the older I get. I'm not really good in crowds. I don't really enjoy it, you know? So if it's a crowded space and it's, you know, not like I have a seat in a theater or something, I don't last more than a few minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that is. I don't know.
So anyway, when you're like doing a meet and greet with fans and there's, you know, 300 people waiting to meet Bob the drag queen and the five people there to meet you. I guess it's not that big of a deal then.
Right.
Speaking of Bob's taking over for Ben de la Creme in one of your upcoming shows because Ben's gone missing, right?
No, he's taking over for Ginger Minge.
Oh, he's taking over for Ginger Minge.
You mean so Ben. Ben de la Creme played the part originally a few years ago when we did it. And mm-hmm. I've been wanting to do it again. But Ben last year couldn't do it because of a burlesque commitment. And, you know, we want to do it in the fall. And then this year, Ben couldn't do it because she's doing a big Halloween run of her own show that people will be able to go see at the ACT Theater in Seattle, like a big Halloween show that's her own thing. And so she and I talked about it, and she said, I feel like I keep holding you back from doing Hocus Pocus again, or Hokum Pokum, as we call it. And, you know, you have my blessing, basically, to, like, recast it, which was really sweet of her, because it was kind of true in a way. Like, she wanted to do it, and so I was waiting for her availability, but then it just never came through. And so then we asked, or I asked Ginger Minj if she wanted to do it, and she said yes. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say exactly what is going on, but I know I'm allowed to say that she was cast in a big movie. And so the schedule for the movie shoot was conflicting with our dates. And so she had to bow out. And yeah,
there's
totally
rumors
understand.
That she's in the live action Disney Aladdin, and she plays Iago the parrot.
That's
I don't know.
I think it has been reported somewhere. It has been reported.
I do know what the movie is, but it's not. Yeah, so it's
public record.
It's, yeah, so just, you know, feel free to share it in your notes or whatever. I know that for a while I wasn't allowed to talk about it, so you know what I mean. And so I asked Bob if he could do it, and so Bob is stepping in, and she's going to play the part of Mary. And I'm really, really excited. And I was really excited to have Ginger do it too, you know. So it'll be a different show. I've had to rewrite it a bit, you know, for Bob. Because, you know, I always write the shows for whoever is in the show.
Right.
So it's changed. And who knows, like maybe. And then we're doing it in London and Manchester with a performer there named Holstar. And so that's a different version.
W-H or just H-O-L-E?
H-O-L-E star.
Those British drag queens sure have some great names. Math.
Yeah.
Holstar.
Yeah, she's from London, and she will be playing the part of Mary there. So Jinx and I will go to London. So there's different versions of it. And next year, because this year when we announced it, the sort of response was so, so big that I think next year we're going to actually do a big, big Hokum Pokum tour all over the place. So we're actually putting that together now.
Hey, so just for the audience that's curious that isn't near a computer right now, so Ginger Minj, it's public record on Logo and on her Twitter account. She's announced that it's a movie called Dumplin' with Jennifer Aniston, and it films in Atlanta. And they're currently in production for it. So congratulations, Ginger. That's really
yeah,
great news.
Exciting.
Yeah. So,
and you know, I was like, when she called me, she was so disappointed. Because, of course, these things come up. And I told her, like, my God, we'll do something together in the future, you know. But break a leg and do a great job in the movie. And what a great opportunity for her.
Yeah. I just think that she has so many more skills that have yet to be tapped by, you know, I mean, she's an extraordinary actor and singer and performer and
so funny, so talented. Yeah. I really look forward to, you know, working with her in the future, but also seeing her on the big screen.
And like Coco Peru, she's a genuinely a nice
person.
She is
super is a nice person. Yeah. I took my mother. My mother wanted to visit her friend in Providence, Rhode Island, early in June. And because her friend opened up a brew pub out there. I stopped at one of the gay clubs. And, you know, they recognized me from Cooking with Drag Queens. And she goes, oh, I listened to your podcast with Ginger Minj. And I want to tell you, that girl did not star on Broadway. And I was just like she said on the podcast, I asked my friend. And I'm like, oh, your friend knows everything about Broadway? Like, yes, he does. And, you know, and if you, and so, like, she was really mad that I would allow her to get away with this lie. I'm like, well, there's Broadway, then there's off Broadway, and it's all kind of considered the same thing. And it's like, depending on what you do. And I'm like, I had no reason. Why would I question her?
I performed in off Broadway. Yeah. Actually, I performed in Broadway.
Who said that?
Yeah.
What?
Who said that they performed on Broadway? Ginger?
Ginger said that when she was like 18 or 19 or in her early 20s, she went to New York City and got a job working in a play on Broadway.
If the theater is on Broadway Street Avenue in New York City?
It's Broadway or off-Broadway or off-off-Broadway. It depends on the theater size. So if it's a large, it doesn't have to actually be on Broadway. It just is a larger theater is Broadway. Off-Broadway is slightly smaller. Off-off-Broadway is smaller than that. And then off-off-off-Broadway.
Then I was off-off-off-off-off-Broadway. Yeah. But I was on Chicago. Broadway in New York City that I performed in drag.
Okay.
I have photos of it, too.
All right.
So and Ginger said she performed, you know, in a play on Broadway, but this woman went back and found the theater or something and determined it was not.
Counted the seats.
She's counting the seats. She just wanted me to know that she had caught Ginger in that lie. But I have to believe Ginger. Why would she,
believe.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Broadway, it's a big, big deal to perform on Broadway. That is a big deal. That's a huge accolade. But Varla Jean Merman, who I'm in 5 to 9 with, she actually is a drag queen who performed on Broadway. And I always ask her about it, what that experience was like. Because it's like very few people get to do that,
Right. But what did Varla have to say?
Well, it was amazing. It was like a dream come true for her. It was magical and all that stuff. And she co-starred in... I don't know if this was the same show, but she's done a lot of big, big theater. And, she has the theater agents and all that. And she was in one show where she co-starred really closely with Leslie Jordan. So they were in, they worked very closely together. And she loved working with him and, really loved the whole experience. And one of the props that we use in our show, 5 to 9, is actually something that actually came from that one of the Broadway shows she was in. This big car.
Leslie Jordan used to work in a restaurant with Lady Bunny. He was a waiter and she was a bus. What was drag queen?
There was a bus boy.
A bus person. Because she was like 17, 18 years old.
And so Leslie Jordan talked to Lady Bunny and they just started sounding like each other.
That's a Chattanooga, Tennessee accent. Yeah.
So that's the only reason why those two talk like that is because they basically like fed off the same well. Mm-hmm.
Look at them now.
Yeah. Well, Bunny says, though, her voice has changed. And if you listen to Bianca Del Rio imitate Lady Bunny, that's the old Lady Bunny voice, not the new Lady Bunny
voice. What's the new Lady Bunny voice? Is it more lower? It's like, girl.
Well, that's the Bianca Del Rio version. Is the old
voice. I got to see Bunny last week.
Yeah.
She was in P-Town?
No, she was in Boston, and we went over for the night, and because you can take a ferry back and forth, and we went
of
for
course the night, you and, can.
Yeah.
Which ferry did you take?
The bear one. And we saw her perform in Boston, and I got to, catch up with her a little bit. And now I forget. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. She has a whole, I don't know if you remember, but she did a parody version of Vogue where she kind of reads all the queens on Drag Race.
Yeah. What was contour funny, your nose.
Yeah. Yeah. So she has a new version of it, like with all the new queens. So she did that, which was really fun. And we were like making fun of her lyrics afterwards because some of the, they're very, very funny, but they're also very simple. Like Bunny gets away with just, like it was kind of like, dun 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 dun. Eureka is an inbred pig. Like that was like literally one of the lyrics.
Well, you know, was like,
really?
From what I understand, I don't know if I think I don't know if Lady Bunny told us this or if it was,
spilling the
or if this was on Facebook. What was the difference?
We're not supposed to say this, RuPaul, but we're going to say it anyway.
RuPaul did not appreciate that song.
RuPaul was upset about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
But she got over it.
But yeah. I was going to say, she's made a whole new version with all the queens.
Do you think that's going to stop Lady Bunny just because RuPaul's upset at her for a couple of weeks?
No, I doubt it. But
that just gives her more material.
Trixie, I said to Trixie, were you in the, because Trixie wasn't with us, she had to work. And I said, were you in the original Vogue, rap that she does about all the queens? And Trixie said, no, and I wish I was. I was like, well, you are now. Let me tell you.
What did she say about Trixie?
Do you remember the line?
I wouldn't tell her. I said, you'll have to wait and hear it.
Well, you can tell us. She's not going to listen to this podcast unless she's sitting
right
there.
The truth of the matter is, this is the absolute truth.
Yeah.
I thought the line about Trixie was funny, but not funny enough to remember it. But I made Trixie believe it was really rich and juicy. I was like, "Oh, girl, I don't want to ruin the surprise."
You're so diplomatic.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just I forgot what it was.
Well, you're really good at navigating all this like delicate balance between shade and love, and you know,
this, I try.
It's extraordinary what you do. I mean, it's. You know, like the whole idea of the drag is fierce and fun and this mantra. And then, you know, Alaska, who is it? Jinx Monsoon posted it. Then Alaska posted. And you were like, you were a little bit kind of peeved by it.
I wasn't really. I just asked for credit. But it's so stupid. It's such a stupid thing to ask for credit for. And that's the whole point. You know what I mean? I was making a joke out of it by pretending to be, you know, like, hey, wait, that's my mantra, bitch. It's more a joke of, you know, that whole thing of like drag culture. We all
lift,
all borrow heavily from one another. Yes. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us, even when we don't know we're doing it. It's interesting being here and seeing a million drag shows. Well, not a million. I counted one night. Like on any given night, you can see anywhere between 20 or 30 different shows here. And I would say half or more of those feature drag performance. You know what I mean? Some don't, obviously. Like we're sure, you know, Steve Grand is at this theater. There's no, you know, there's no drag in that show. There's just, you know, a bunch of queer entertainment you can go to. But what I've noticed is we borrow from each other even when we don't realize it. Cause you'll see one queen do sort of a joke that another queen does. And I don't think that they're stealing from each other. I think we just, you know, lift from each other, like you say, like without even realizing it. And when you point it out to a girl, usually she goes, oh, God, I better change that. You know,
wasn't that the whole thing with the purse first? Like was
what was purse first borrowed?
It was I believe it may have been borrowed by somebody else, but that's all I'm going to say.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that. Well, Bob's right upstairs. Should I go ask?
go by
I'm
all
just
means.
Kidding. She's not here.
I'll tell you a little secret. It's a pose that Kim Chi would do. I'm sure I told you this story before.
Oh, maybe you did. I think you did.
And I'm surprised Foster brought it. I told him not to bring it up anymore because I think that's probably part of the. Never mind.
You think Bob's pissed off at you because you said that purse first may have been something that, you know, this is the word cryptomnesia.
Yeah.
And great artists and great writers sometimes just absorb things from their surroundings and not even aware of it. It's not malicious. It's not meant to be fraudulent. It's just
we all do it. Everybody do it. Does it? You do it. I do it. We all do it. And to what degree is basically what you have to kind of come to grips with. And to what degree do you know that you're doing it? But of course, we're all influenced by everything around us. And if you're a fan of drag and you do drag, you're going to borrow from people, whether you know it or not, you know?
Mm. But I think what happens sometimes is that there's a power dynamic between who's being borrowed and borrowing.
Of course.
And, you know, like
course.
Elvis Presley, most famously, would do covers of African-American songs and not credit them and not pay for royalties. And it's,
Vogue, for example, is a great example of that, you know? To what degree did Madonna have the right to exploit Vogue culture, you know? And that's an argument that's been going on since the song came out, right? So, that happens all the time, you know?
And that's why I say, like, good drag sometimes is anarchistic, like RuPaul's, you know, core values is that we don't necessarily answer the question. We sometimes just make things more complicated.
Well, we get people thinking, right?
Yeah, it's about creating a discussion and making that discussion fun and passionate and insightful.
When I see drag queens lifting from me after years and years and years of blood, sweat, and torture, and then they go on to, you know, become the world's first spooky drag queen or whatever, all I do is applaud them and praise them and then, you know, send Sharon an invoice for a cut, you know, every month or two.
Well, you know, Robin Williams would just write a check to any comedian that come up to him and be like,
"You stole my joke.
You stole my joke." And he's like, "Okay, here's $3,000. Go away."
And that's why he died broke.
He did?
I think he had some.
Broke?
I think he had some financial difficulties towards the end. Yes.
Shit.
I don't know if he was broke, but he didn't have as much money as you would think he might have.
Huh. That's, yeah.
Good. I guess Good Morning Vietnam didn't pay as much as you think it did.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine he was in so many huge movies and he had such power in Hollywood. I mean, I'm wrong.
I might have been broke from
bad investments or something.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. The other thing, too, is like, you know, these celebrities, it's much more expensive while they're alive than after they're dead. Like Elvis, like it was expensive to maintain Elvis. You know,
right,
his lifestyle,
right,
and everything.
Sense.
And so after he was gone, his music became more popular in a sense, and then you didn't have to pay to maintain him.
Yeah. Well, I think that they say that about Michael Jackson as well.
Mm.
Yeah, because if your lifestyle, if it's so expensive just to to maintain a certain way of being, I guess you're spending a lot of money.
Hey, I guess now's as good a time as any. We're just about a week away from doing our season 3 of Cooking with Drag Queens Kickstarter. And this time, it's personal. So in the past...
Was it personal last time?
It was personal last time. It's even more personal. So the difference is in season 3, we're taking the show in a slightly different, edgier direction. If we manage to raise our $2,000 amount and go over it...
$2,000?
$20,000, sorry. Mm-hmm. $20,000 amount, we're turning it into a battle royale frosting... where the drag queens compete against each other in a full kitchen studio with celebrity judges and flying frosting all over the place. So it's kind of going to be a little bit of Dragula, a little bit of RuPaul's Drag Race and the Great British Bake Off show. So we're actually having the queens fight each other, like, you know, with frosting. Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm confused.
Have you ever seen a TV show where they have a food challenge or a cooking challenge and somebody has to create a dish and somebody else has to create a dish and you decide which one is better? That's what we're going to do.
Yes.
And so we're going to have them win for prizes.
And these drag queens are terrified. You know, they're all comfortable sewing. They've been lip syncing for years, styling a wig, everything. And you're like, all right, you Martha Stewart knockoff. Here's a bowl of frosting. Here's a cake. Make it look good. And they will shit in their pants. You want to see drag queens terrified for their lives? Don't pour bugs on them. Make them cook.
Look, you don't have to slam someone else's drag series just to promote your own. You can throw bugs on drag queens and be fabulous, mm-hmm. or have them bake a cupcake. You know what I mean? There's room for all of this. Yeah.
Of course. Listen, we're huge fans of Dragula. It's probably one of my favorite drag series ever.
Yeah, I absolutely think this is why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. It's because of Dragula. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Dragula was, you know, a proof of concept that you can not spend a lot of money and make a really exciting battle drag show.
Yeah, they
show.
Got picked up by an international... cable provider. I'm really happy for them.
Oh, it's huge.
I love the Boulay brothers. I think, you know, you're a fan as well, and I just am so happy for them. They're totally visionary
and they're really nice people.
Yeah, like Coco.
You ran into Coco Peru this summer?
No, she's been in Spain. I haven't seen her in a while. I mean, I was on tour with her in the spring with the Drag Queens of Comedy, but I haven't seen her. I haven't seen her since then.
In the Kickstarter series, we managed to bring a video camera and film all you girls in the Drag Queens of Comedy backstage in your real dressing rooms with your real makeup and your real snacks and food. And I got to tell you that some of the best work we've ever done was just that evening, just filming you all really delicately while you guys were in between your scenes or performances. Just
that was fun.
Oh my God. It's really, I can't wait to show that stuff, because it's really just something
special. I was
going to
ask you guys about that. I was going to ask you what the plan, I thought, oh my God, I haven't seen that come out yet. I wonder what they're planning on doing with it. Because it was, yeah, you guys were, you got it's a lot summer. Of content.
It's summer.
This summer.
We wait till, yeah, summer. Everybody's sleeping now. The fall comes
out. Oh, I see. I see. So you're waiting. Well, that's good. Okay.
Yeah. And part of it is like, you know, some of our audience is students who are, you know, procrastinating, studying for tests. So they want to look at cool things on the internet. And so we put it up then when they're like, you should be studying for your English midterms.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. So what were you going to say about Coco?
Oh, that she's a really nice person. And everybody who sees her should say, you know, you're a very nice person.
Because she's not sick of hearing that from listeners of the Feast of Fun.
She loves that. And she really is a nice person. And so she invited us into her dressing room. And I have to say, like, the conversation we had about being nice to people, like, we got into it deep.
Mm-hmm.
Was really, really, really great. And,
well, the reason I was confused about it is because I thought maybe you knew something that I don't believe is yet public knowledge, but I'm gonna spill the tea here.
Oh.
Because of what we were talking about. So, and the new, I think this is okay. And the new Dragula, they're filming season 2. I, in a few weeks, fly to LA and meet with Coco, because we're the guest judges together on a particular episode.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So it's the Booger Queen episode?
Oh, Fausto.
Excuse me?
What's the theme of the episode? You guys don't even know yet.
We don't know. They don't tell us. I mean, I know where the location is, and I know I'm not supposed to say what that is.
Ah.
But I would guess I could figure out what the theme is, but yeah, they're actually taking us out of Los Angeles to do this. So
I'm really looking forward to the second season of Dragula. You know, there's just so many fun, cool things, and I have no doubt that All Stars 3 and season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race will incorporate some of that torture drag element.
So probably.
This is something I envision in the near future. Mm-hmm. So now we have basically an arms race between World of Wonder, the Princess of Drag Race, and the Belay Brothers, which do Dragula, to see who can torture and abuse drag queens more.
Well, I think Dragula kind of said, we're going to do this. I mean, they have, you know, in their first season, I thought it was shocking. I was shocked by it, you know. They have, you know, people locked in coffins and stuff with bugs being thrown on them. I don't know that Drag Race is a different kind of torture. I feel like more of an emotional,
psychological torture. Yeah.
Sleep deprivation. And
yes, exactly. Like, let's get your friend to come on and say horrible things to you. That kind of thing, you know.
Hey, there's this new story that I want you to chime in on this. I guess it's this company's got into hot water called Fireworld, giving parents tools to find out if your son is gay. They suggested hacking his Facebook account and seeing if he had visited gay websites that could confirm a parent's suspicions. They include that your son may be gay if he takes good care of himself, is more interested in reading and theater than football, being shy as a young boy, and having certain piercings and that resemble of female singers and divas.
No, it's he has piercings and he likes female singers and divas.
It's then suggested a variety of ways to be sure, including monitoring his Facebook use and seeing if he's visited gay forums and if he has the dick pics on his phone from other men. That
so
would
it's
do
spyware
it.
That you put on your kid's computer and it will tell you, is he listening to like Lady Gaga too much?
Right. You I mean, to me, it is totally vile. I mean, it's just what decent parent is interested in something like that? That is so disgusting. I mean, it made me so mad. It's just like, it reminded me of something that happened when I was a teenager where this mother of my very first boyfriend, she was extremely, extremely Catholic, like worse than the traditional Catholics, because she was a born again Catholic.
Oh, those are always the worst.
They're the scariest and almost awful. And she went to the fucking video store where I was renting videos and asked the clerk to pull up the account of myself and my friend Jennifer to find out what movies we were renting, because her son, Chris, was hanging out with us so much. And of course, I remember exactly what we'd rented. We had rented Truth or Dare and Blue Velvet. These were the big hot, whatever other movies. She wasn't as bothered by them or whatever. And she basically forbid him to hang out with us again because these movies proved that we were, you know, horrible people. And this same woman, when she basically determined that she was sure her son was gay, which he was, but he hadn't come out to her for obvious reasons, sent him to electroshock therapy.
Oh my God.
And after doing that to him, kicked him out of the house and stopped helping him with any sort of financial, parenting.
Right.
And my friend had to go to college in DC and figure out a way to pay his own way and rough it, and was ostracized and disowned by his family. And I think after watching someone you care about go through an experience like that, that woman to me is that's the worst. I feel like she should have been put in jail, you know.
Well, I'm surprised the person at the video store even gave her that information.
These are like, this was a rednecky mom and pop video store who probably she duped into not even, you know what I mean? Who knows? I don't think they realized that she was using the information for.
Well, I hope your friend Chris made it out okay.
He's great. I mean, he has an amazing life. He and his husband, hopefully people can't figure out who I'm talking about because it's like super personal information. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they have an amazing life. And you know, I think in some ways he became such a success because, you know, you become a survivor and a fighter, you know, as a lot of queer people do when they're turned away. Oh God, it's just so sad because I don't know. I'm not going to say anything else because I just don't want anyone to, you know, figure out what.
Well, how do you figure out if by looking at your boyfriend's social media if he's interested in becoming a drag queen?
How do you figure it out?
I mean, besides, you know, because everybody's like fans of RuPaul's Drag Race, so that's not really like.
Why don't you just ask him?
Yeah. Why don't you try having a communicative relationship with the person
and see how that goes? Him. Yeah.
But you know, these points that this spyware actually measures—they're not wrong. You know, these are all.
Well, of course
a lot
not.
Of these are signs that they're gay.
You know, so. Of course well, not. It's like of course, but you know, it's like if you're so obsessed with the fact that your child might be gay, that you need to install spyware, you're a fucking loser. Like, you know, maybe focus more on like becoming a decent parent who's going to love their kid unconditionally.
Right.
And not worry so much about what they may or may not become.
Well, it's a
I
lot
don't
of,
know. It makes me sick. Yeah, it's so gross.
Yeah. It's a lot of insecurities they're dealing with there. And they should just do what other parents do. Just check the history for gay porn. If your kid's watching gay porn, he's probably gay.
But if your kid wants to be a fierce drag queen, call an editor and a publicist and set up a meeting with Vivacious.
That's right. I loved that video. That was adorable.
With Lactatia.
Little Lactatia is the 11-year-old boy who says he wants to be a drag queen for the rest of his life.
Aww.
And his mother.
Atta girl.
And she, they made a meeting with Vivacious, and Vivacious was so sweet to that little girl, drag queen. And she was just like, you are my replacement.
But she's like, but I'm not going anywhere. So
you better wait your turn.
Well, maybe they can co-star.
They were all very cute together. And it's interesting. Right now, we have an unprecedented number of high profile drag queens. And for someone like you, it's really it's a golden age to be living in.
I mean, I feel like drag is more popular now than it's ever been. And there's room for all of us, you know, and that's the thing is I think people need to, especially other drag performers, need to remember, like, if you're good and you're entertaining and you've got something that's worthy of an audience, this is the perfect time to be working in drag. But I hear a lot of people, you know, complaining about it, or worried that, you know, you're only popular if you're on TV or this or that. And it's like, come to Provincetown, you know, where the biggest selling drag queens are Miss Richfield, Dina Martina, and Varla Jean Merman. You know, that's just the reality. Like, you know, if you've got a good show and you've got an entertaining or, you know, artistic show to sell, it'll do well. You know, it'll do well. It'll find its audience.
And there is an audience, like what that TV show has done for drag is created a larger audience for all drag queens.
Exactly. You know, that's the thing, is it's like, I think for anyone who is a fan of Drag Race, it's only natural that you'd become interested in the drag that's in your local community or that's in your, you know, I've seen it all over the world. Like, you know, in different places where the Drag Race girls don't even tour, like thriving big drag communities have now like blossomed and flowered. And I think it's because of this sort of, you know, the synergy of Drag Race and the internet, and people are interested in it and want to experience it in person.
In the future, everyone's going to be a drag queen, and the future is here.
When that happens, it'll all be over, but that's, you know, that's fine.
That's the drag apocalypse.
Yeah. I think when everyone's a drag queen, then what's interesting about it anymore?
Then the nudity is the new drag.
Well, but some drag queens are already doing that.
Nothing is
that's
new.
That's true.
You know,
it's about sharing and loving.
I saw, who was it? Carmen Carrera. She was basically naked.
Carmen Carrera does that. Gia Gunn's practically naked.
Oh my God. Have you ever seen Willem? Like,
Willem's
she
naked.
Gets fully naked. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, Valentina's naked. They all get naked.
Is she? Valentina gets naked.
She did that Vogue thing, right?
Oh no, yeah. That Vogue was great. Was,
yeah.
The and sex yeah. book. The yeah, sex yeah, book, yeah. That was fabulous. That was amazing. Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she eats red M&Ms and drinks champagne.
That's what I've heard. I sort of missed the boat on all that, but then someone was getting me all caught up that, you know, Valentina went off the show and has been, I guess she's become known as an enfant terrible. Mm.
But she's not the one who's asking for the red M&Ms or the champagne. That's the ultimate injustice of it. She's not the one. No. So I'm just like, girl, just own it. You know, it's like people are making you turn to be this badass. Then, you know, come in a motorcycle munching on those red M&Ms. I don't know. Do you have any unusual requests in your contracts or rider?
Well, no, because most of my rider is all tech. So it's like, you know, a video projector with this many lumens in the bulb and a screen that's this size and a, you know, dressing, you know, it's all stuff that I need to put on the show, and anything like snacks or, you know, I don't give a shit about that. You know what I mean? Like I just, you know, it's a tech rider. So my rider is very much about, what it takes for me to put on a show. So a lot of times we send it and it basically weeds out anyone who is not able to, you know, produce one of our shows, because, you know, when you book most drag queens, they show up with their wigs and their costume and hand you a CD and they can get out there and do a show. And for me, because it's theater, it's not that easy. You know,
Mark and I have performed in drag in venues that didn't even have a sound system, and they brought a boom box. to
oh my God. Venue. I saw you perform in drag in a Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
I loved it. I was loving it.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I was booing.
Yeah.
You were
caught on camera booing too. But
I was trying to be a team player.
They're filming us, and then we hear the boo. So Kirthy like goes to pan to the audience, the booing, and then all of a sudden you were like, I could tell you went to Catholic school. Because you just, like, all of a sudden, you went from boo to, like, this innocent little boy just sitting there, like, golden.
Like
yes,
I'd
Sister Mary.
Caught.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah, no, you hadn't been caught at all. You were like, dumb.
Well, because they saw the camera pointed to you, and you're like, boo! And you're like, oh, shit! I love this.
Oh, my God.
It was perfect.
Oh, peaches.
Are you guys going to the Austin Drag Festival this year?
We are. We're doing another live podcast with... I'm blanking on her name. Karen from Finance.
Oh, is she going to do our show?
She is.
Oh, wow.
She's fabulous. Australian.
She's Australian. She's hilarious drag queen. Mm. And lots of other gals who I can't announce yet, but they're quite winning sensations. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, fabulous.
Are you going to make it there?
I'm not this year, unfortunately. Mm. I did have a really good time. I love the whole concept of it, but it's not going to work out, but
that's okay. I'll just take your gigs for you.
All right.
How to be? What is it that you did a really great presentation on how to start your own cult?
Yeah, it was kind of like the idea was building an audience. You know, that was what it was.
And I still to this day I get asked that question from everyone, and ultimately it's just like I use you as an example. It's just like, reach out, build it, and they will come.
I agree. I think, like, you know, the best way to do it is just to start small and put one foot in front of the other.
Mm.
And, work with the best people you can. Lift yourself up by surrounding yourself with amazing people.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Not you want to be the ugliest drag queen in the room. Not the prettiest one.
Then I guess you've cornered that market.
Peaches, when are you making your way back to San Francisco?
9/11.
Oh, wow. That's a good day to fly. The flights are cheap that day.
Yeah, so I'm flying back 2 weeks from today. And I'm really... I mean, I'm having a really good time in Provincetown. It's been... a successful business venture and all that. But I think the thing that was, and I knew it was going to be hard, but that was the hardest, was just missing my partner, who did come and visit. But I think because I travel a lot throughout the year, and I'm not ever in one place for very long, I'm used to seeing him, then traveling, then seeing him, and then traveling. And this was, I got a little bit homesick and lonely. Mm-hmm. And so if I do it next year, he has already agreed that he would come for much longer, and we would, you know, make him part of the deal.
Get him a paid gig.
Yeah, exactly.
Get him a bartending job out there or something.
Well, the good thing is he really, really liked Provincetown.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't been here before, and I don't want to invest much time in building, because every market I go into, I look at it as... Because of the kind of the way I do things, I look at it as building, a new audience.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been working a lot on Seattle and Portland, and then focused a little bit now on Los Angeles. But I've been working on Los Angeles for years. So, you know, basically in those cities, I have an audience. It's not as big as San Francisco, but it's getting there. You know what I mean? And that's what I've kind of been investing in Provincetown. But I said to him, I'm like, I don't want to keep doing this and building this thing in Provincetown if you're not interested in this place, because it's so much time for me. I'd like it to be something that you enjoy and want to come and spend time in. So he came, and I didn't put any pressure on him, and he really, really loved it. So I think, you know, we're going to talk about him coming and spending time here, you know, in the future.
Well, when you're so close to somebody and you're apart, it's almost like half of your brain is missing.
Yeah. I mean, we talk every day and all of that. But yeah, it's not the same. My whole routine is messed up. Like, there's one little teeny tiny movie theater here. I have seen one movie the whole time I've been here in the cinema, you know. So that's really strange for me. Like, I go to the movies at home. We go to the movies once or twice a week, you know? So it's, you know, it's a whole different lifestyle being here.
Peaches, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and, you know, we
love
living vicariously through your adventures in Provincetown. It really sounds like
something extraordinary. I've missed you guys. And I would say at least a couple a week, listeners have come up to me and introduced themselves and said that they know me from the podcast. So,
sweet.
Again, thank you guys for having me on, despite that one asshole who comments on your page and says they hate me.
He's been banned.
Oh, he was banned. I hope he wasn't banned just because of me.
Well, listen, if you don't, the thing is that I don't necessarily trust those reviews. You know what I mean? That's probably just like some queen that you probably worked with that's very jealous of you or something like that. Cause I think the content, that you bring to the show is really, I think it's quite good and it's fun.
Oh, thank you. Even when it's,
you know, when we go in deep with like research heavy shows or if we're just kicking kind of like today, I enjoy them both. And so I just think that sometimes people just get really weirded out and jealous and they do kind of crazy things and make crazy comments along those lines. I don't think it was a fair critique.
I thought what's been nice for me personally to anyone that's listening has been the people who have introduced themselves and saying how much they enjoy hearing me on the show. After, you know, that comment, because it did made me a little gun shy about coming on or whatever, you know, because everyone's sensitive, you know what I mean? So I was more like, oh my God, maybe I just go on that show too much and, you know, I don't want to annoy their audience that they've worked on, you know what I mean? Anyway, whatever.
Well, they can always just tune out if they don't want to, you know what I mean?
Well, but the thing that was so nice this summer was hearing people who are like, oh my God, I've missed you on the show. When are you going to be on again? And that is really sweet and was really nice to hear. And your fans are really fabulous, you know? And so anyways, thanks to all those people who have said hello. And of course, thanks to you guys for having me on.
Well, Feast of Fun is a family, and it's as much your podcast as it is ours, and we adore you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope we all start making money off of it soon.
Hey, people came to see your show.
That's true, actually. Yeah. You know what? I might make more money off of it than you do some days.
You probably do.
I think most of the guests make more money from the show than we do.
Right. Oh, God, we didn't even talk about my wonderful time with Devin. Remind me, and we'll talk about it the next time I'm on. But we had a fun time in P-Town together.
You should have put it in the notes.
I know. Sorry, I've been distracted. But that's okay. I'll let you go. And thank you. I love you guys. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sweetie. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Peaches Christ lives in Provincetown, Massachusetts.
During the summer.
You can learn more about Peaches Christ's shows by following her on social media at Peaches Christ on Facebook, Instagram land, Twitter land, or go to peacheschrist.com. There's a lot of good shows. Hokum Pokum, the tour, is coming to Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco with Jinx Monsoon and Bob the Drag Queen paying tribute to the Hocus Pocus Disney movie with Bette Midler, Kathy Najimy, and Sarah Jessica Parker. And yes, people, I did that all from memory. I didn't even look at a
piece of paper. Well, you watched the movie pretty recently, too, didn't you?
I have to say, like, Peaches, drag queens turn trash into treasure, and Hocus Pocus is interesting. It's cool. It's fun.
There's some good moments in it, but it's not.
It's nothing like Peaches. So if you're kind of like on the fence about some of these movies, and you're like, why are they paying tribute to it? It's part of it is because, you know, they can improve upon the original and really sort of laugh at it and celebrate it at the same time and really turn into this majestic masterpiece. In memoriam, a great legend here in Chicago just passed away. Chuck Renslow, who was a muscle physique photographer, gay bar owner, pioneer. He was starting gay bars when only the mob would open gay bars before Stonewall. And then was the founder of International Mr. Leather, who became the largest leather and sexual fetish conference in the world. And you can argue that leather as a sexual identity, as an identity, as a preference, as a kink, as a fetish, would not even be something that big if it wasn't for the efforts of men like Chuck Renslow.
Sure, he certainly solidified leather's legacy in the world. You know, it may have been still around, but definitely not on the scale it is today, because he was such a proud proponent of leather. And so last night we attended a memorial service that they had at the Metro, which is actually a venue that Chuck had owned at one point in time. And it was a white party because they used to host a white party. And so they say that this was the final white party. So most everybody was all dressed in white. And I love that Fausta's mother's like, oh, you guys are celebrating like the Indians do because they mourn in white. And I'm just kind of like, okay.
Well, there's a really cute photo on my Facebook wall that I posted. And, you know, and I say this with the deepest respect and admiration. Chuck Renslow was a horny motherfucker. He really enjoyed having sex with lots of hot, muscular guys, trashy guys, men, runaway boys and college studs and tough men and all kinds of men, you know, and he dedicated his life and his businesses to helping others find the same kind of sexual experiences. And as his body changed through his life, his sexuality evolved as well. And he to this last breath was whipping and spanking and having a good time. Yeah. And you know, may we all have a life as pleasurable and as meaningful at 1/10 of what Chuck Renslow had.
Yeah.
You know, he built a legacy of sex positivity that will be felt and spanked and whipped by many people all around the world for generations to come.
For sure. And Fausto and I actually met in one of the venues that he owned, the Chicago Eagle, is where I first laid eyes upon Fausto.
Now, what do you say, like, you know, people are told this is a memorial service, wear white, and you have a white shirt in your closet, your Facebook wall has photos of you wearing a white collared shirt in other photographs as recently as a couple months ago, and you show up to this memorial service wearing all black. I'm just saying, you know, it's says something about you as a person. To each their own. Everybody mourns. There's no wrong way to mourn. And, you know, maybe I was just like, girl, what are you thinking? But it was really great to be part of this memorial service. They were playing. The memorial service started out as, you know, people remembering Chuck and his surviving partner, Ron Eamon, really probably gave the best testimonial and really got us to grasp what it was like to be part of Chuck's family and how some way or another we're all part of Chuck's family. And then afterwards, it turned it into a big dance party playing lots of music, retro music. That was there from years past. And there was this one performer who I didn't know what the gender identity was, but they seem to be like the next generation of Sylvester. And she was doing a performance based on, she was basically, her name was Samuel. Let me see if I can get the name here.
Samulus,
like fabulous and Sam together. And Samulus was doing this amazing cover of Mighty Reel by Sylvester. And it felt like full circle. It felt like this is the legacy that he built. And now Chuck Renslow, that kinky motherfucker, lives inside all of us. Long live Chuck Renslow. Be your own Chuck Renslow. Be your own leather daddy.
Because what was it? Nobody said Chuck didn't have sex with enough people, right?
Yeah, that's what I said. It was like, you know, and the memorial service, I didn't hear anybody say he slept with too many people.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. You know, because chase the dream, folks, no matter how hung they are or how far they are, chase the dream.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes the show happen. Next week, we are launching our Kickstarter for Cooking with Drag Queens Season 3. So if you could help us out there on the first day, it would be greatly appreciated because that's when you kind of get the attention of Kickstarter. And if they see that a lot of people are into this project, they promote it more because the more money we raise, the more things we can do.
And so you can find out and be the first kid on the block to access. And we're going to have a lot of like rewards for people who are donating through the campaign. So if only exclusive to the people who've donated to this Season 3 campaign. So go to Kickstarter, search for Feast of Fun, and just follow us on Kickstarter and you'll be the first one to know, or just send us an email and we'll add you to the email blast. So we want to thank you guys so much for listening to the show, and you know what an extraordinary person Peaches Christ is, and how much fun we have with her. We hope that we're able to share that fun with you guys, and we hope that we can share that magic for years to come. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You think cooking and drag queens don't mix? They do if it's Feast of Fun. You see, we have that special way of capturing flavor. Deep brewed flavor for that awesome taste. Check it out, cookingwithdragqueens.com.